יו יו לחיים לחיים היי לחיים דוי ממולה שלוי. Incredible. Yonis and Shkayach, thank you. I've never seen grown people move so quickly as it is for, like, wow, cleaning out the freezer from Pesach. Incredible. Incredible.
Goulash.
Yonis, that is... okay, Chavra. Good, a good Erev Shabbos. First of all, again, once again, a tremendous Yashar Koach to Yehoshua Portnoy for dedicating the bourbon and scotch Lezecha Nishmas, his father, Rav Moshe Ben Rav Eliezer, in Hashem Amir Hashem should have an Aliyah, and Rabbi Yitzi Bienenstock for sponsoring the bourbon and scotch tonight in appreciation of the entire Kehila. I also want to go ahead and thank Reb Steve for picking up the chalent and the kugel tonight, especially Ashkoch to Knish Shop for providing us Baruch Hashem with some good Erev Shabbos Meichel, and Yashkoch to Yonason. Mamish, like a late-breaking surprise over here. Thank you. Thank you. It's very sweet. Chavra, with that, let us begin. Now it's becoming too much about the Gashmias. Now there's too many options
where's
here. Seriously. Next week, Chavra, is herring and kichel. I'm just telling you. We're getting back to basics. We're getting back to
the choir. Let's see. Rabbis Tish and Raskin.
Okay, fine. That's right. We're, I don't know. We've lost our way here. All right. So, Chavra, so let's begin. So we're continuing in Meretz Hashem today on page 38. So actually, what we're doing tonight is we're going to Meretz Hashem continue forward. We're going to continue forward and mention what we started last week. So if you remember, again, last week, Rabbi, so we started Os Tes Vav on page 36. So just a very, very quick recap. So if you remember, again, we're focused on the same thing. The beautiful part about this Limud is it's very hyper-focused. Namely, what's our goal? Our goal, Rabbi, is to stop seeing simply with our eyes and to be able to see the greater planes of existence. And sometimes in order to do that, you have to stop seeing with your eyes, you have to start seeing with your machshava. The goal is to develop expansiveness of thought, the ability to be able to see that there is so much more to the world, so much more to our lives, so much more to our existence than that which we simply see with our eyes. But that, again, requires this expansiveness of machshava. So we'll say, so in last week's shiur, Piagetzna was teaching us, so how do you get to this level? How do you get to this level of expansiveness of machshava? Right? What are the actions? Just give him the swarm, right? You know, just against the bag. Right? So ultimately, I say, the ruchnias, the ruchnias. So thank you, sure, thank you. So how do you get to this level? How do you get to this level of expansiveness of thought? So if you remember, again, the Piaget's Rabbi Osei was telling us, well, you have to engage in the behaviors. Remember, again, Rabbi Osei, we're trying to figure out how to open up our minds. We're trying to be able to think in a different way. We're trying to be able to feel differently about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to experience things that can't be sensed with the physical senses, but going with the spiritual. So what the Piaget's was teaching us is, the first step to that is modifying your behaviors. Right, it's all about behavioral modification. Change the way you behave, and ultimately, you will come to change the way that you feel. So what's the first behavioral modification? So if you remember, go to the Piaget and teach us to be a Pasha to Yid, to be a simple Jew. To be a simple Jew. The way the Piaget now framed it, be tumim like a child. Be simple like a child. Just like a child is not complex. Just like a child is very straightforward. So we have to return to a little bit of that childlike simplicity as well. Remember again, the Piagetzna gave examples of this. He says, right, you ask a child a question. If you ask a child a question, what do you get? What do you get?
Straight answer.
An answer, right? And a straight answer, right? You ask an adult a question, and what do you get? What do you get?
Him and horn.
An explanation. Right, well, so you hear the distinction? You ask a child a question, you get an answer. You ask an adult a question, you'll get an explanation. But I didn't ask you for an explanation. I just asked you a question. It's yes or no. No, I have to explain it. No, you don't. Just tell me the answer. Because we'll see at the end of the day, what ends up happening is, as the Piagetzna, we over-complexify things to the point of ultimately we lose sight of MS. And when we lose sight of MS, expansiveness of machshava becomes virtually impossible. And therefore, if we want to experience this expansiveness of machshava, if we want to be able to see, well, again, I can't go a week without saying it, if I want to be able to see the chariot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? charging through Shalosh Shodis, then I need to start being a simple person. Well, say, isn't it incredible? Because the whole time we're thinking about, oh, I really have to become more complex, right? I really have to become deeper, more, you know, more spiritually multifaceted. And meanwhile, the Piagetson says just the opposite. You actually have to become simpler. You have to become a simpler person, a pashut person. So someone asks you a question, just give an answer. Well, say, by the way, I'll also mention this, like, this is hard. It's hard to be pashut, right? They both say, think of this is just a moment. You know, sometimes you get asked a question, right? And what's your reaction? Oh, man, I'm going to say something snappy. Right? I have a good retort. So they both say, so already, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Right? Besides the fact that generally people like that tend to grate on you over time. Right? I don't need a sarcastic, cynical, snappy comment with every single thing that I'm saying. Sometimes just go ahead and just answer the fashtunkin question and don't give me some type of sarcastic comment. I was going to say, so, and what ends up, and you see what happens. Like, people who are like that, they're often not very thoughtful people. Why? And again, I will say it makes sense because all of that energy is devoted to what? Right? All the energy is devoted to like the one-liners, right? And all of the energy is devoted to the jokes. Meanwhile, the Piagetza says, imagine if you took all of that energy that you're using to be snappy, cynical, and sarcastic and used it for something else. Just use it for something else. Suddenly there's this whole reservoir of energy that is being misappropriated and that could be rechanneled and I could do something with it. So it's incredible. The more posh, so essentially, you know what it is? The more posh, now again, I want to be clear. It doesn't mean that a person shouldn't have a sense of humor. And of course, a snappy comment is good every once in a while. And a joke and even a little bit of cynicism and sarcasm has its place. No, of course. Again, I don't mean like that. But you understand what I mean. You understand that some people make it like a part-time job, right? To be able to come up with stuff like this. So that's already where it's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? So the Piagetza says, if I'm poshut, then suddenly again I have the ability to go ahead and channel energy where it needs to go. So I'm not focused on explanations. And I'm not focused. I'm just focused on simple things, freeing up a whole bunch of bandwidth. I'm also, you know, I find this just, and we're going to continue. I find this. It's one of the things that I'm trying to work on a little bit more, which is that not saying things that don't need to be said. As well say, how often does it happen that you say something? And often, at least for me, it's been like in the form of like some type of snappy response. I say it, I'm like, ooh, that was a good one, right? That was a good one. And then I say to myself, I was like, why did I say it? Besides the fact that there's the possibility, maybe it was offensive, and maybe it was offensive, maybe it was hurtful. But one thing is clear, is even if it wasn't offensive, and even if it wasn't hurtful, it certainly wasn't what? It certainly wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. So like, again, just on a personal level, this resonates with me a lot, because it's one of the things, I'm just trying, I'm not successful most of the time, but at least to be conscious of it. Like, answer more like a child than a complex adult. So we'll say that was last week's share. So this week we're picking up on the top of page 38. So the Piagetza says as follows. So both said, this is incredible. So here's what's fascinating. It sounds so poshut to be poshut, right? It sounds so simple to be simple. But I will say, but we all know that it's not. It's really complicated to be simple. It's actually simple to be complicated, and it's complicated to be simple. Oh. Bumper sticker, right? Bumper sticker. That is a good one, right? I think that was very profound, right? It's complicated to be simple, and it's simple to be complicated, right? So let's say, so what is it? What is it that holds us back from being poshut people? So we'll say, look at page 38. Harbe minios yeshnan le'ish, shemonas al somulios tamarit ve'ritzini. I will say there are many things in life that hold me back from being tamim, which will translate as being like complete or being simple, and ritzini is serious. I will say it's interesting because he just added this word in over here about seriousness. Where does seriousness come in? Because I will say often, like we just said before, people who are not poshut and more complicated often comes with cynicism and sarcasm. When a person is constantly cynical or sarcastic, I will say, what ends up happening? Like, nothing is serious. nothing is serious. Everything is a joke, right? Everything is made light of. So Peter, what holds us back? Well, let's leave aside seriousness for now, and let's focus on pashtus. So what holds us back? What holds us back ultimately from being simple, pashtut people? Look, Rabbi says incredible. He says, Linda the Marshal, Yeshmin, Anivas Murua, Sha'ish Batalif Nea Olam. This is actually very shaykh, we were just talking about this morning in Daf Yomi and just now before the Shira as well. Isn't this Rabbi say? You can have a person, he says, there's a type of false humility. I will say, it's not the false humility that you're thinking of, right? False. Why? When I say false humility, what do you think about, right? How would you define false humility?
Humble brags. Right, stop.
No more. But tell me more. Tell you, right, exactly, right? Humble brags, right? I think the kids call it today low-key. Low-key. I think that's the sprach, no? Low-key? Is that? Whatever. Anyway, so Lemaisa, a false, when you think about false humility, it's like a person who is really very arrogant, but puts on a show of humility. That's not what he's talking about. This is incredible. He says, what's the false type of humility I'm referring to over here? Listen to this. Sha'ish bata lifnei olam v'nimusav, where a person totally negates his own das to the world. Meaning, I will say what? That what do I do? What creates my sense of right and wrong? What society says is right and wrong. So I don't have an opinion. Or my opinion is not, whatever everyone else says is good, is good. Whatever everyone else says is bad, is bad. Whatever the Welt says is moral, is moral. In other words, so then I will say, this, it is a form of humility, because what I'm saying is, I'm being machnia, I'm like subverting myself ultimately again to the will of society around me. There's only one problem. Marichu mokiru harbes nimusia olam v'deos p'nei adam, achu korea kulo lifneim. A person puts so much stock and so much importance on the isms, the sensitivities, the hashkafas of greater society to the point that he literally bows before them. Wow. I just want to point out, we think certain dynamics are new. They're not new, right? The only thing that changes is the ism or the movement or the flavor of the day, right? But lamaisa, the human condition is the human condition. There is always societal pressure to buy into something. So a person who has this misplaced, false type of humility says, well, whatever society says is good has to be good. And whatever society says is bad has to be bad. So whatever the hashkafas of greater society are, I'm korea. I bow before that. V'cha'atzmos libo b'nafsho b'telim unimasim ve'enam bo'im chali de'eskala. So we'll say, what ends up happening? What ends up happening is my entire essence. We'll say, atzmos libo, the essence of my heart, the essence of my soul, are batal. They're negated. And they dissolve. And they never become revealed. Why? Because I've sublimated the totality of my spiritual self to whatever society says is good. He says, the kol kach, isn't this incredible? We'll say, you would not expect to find this in a safe, but like I said, so remember again, the Piaget is writing this in the early 1900s. Like I said, you think there weren't movement, whatever, I don't know, I'm not a historian, whatever the movements were, you think he wasn't combating movements? Again, I don't know how much, seeped into Piagetsna per se, how many influences, but Lamaisa, it's always been the same thing. A Jew lives in society. A Jew is part of society. The job of a Jew is somehow to try to impact society, which is beautiful. The danger is I am surrounded by alien ideas and ideals. I am bombarded by things which are fundamentally against the grain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon. So it's tempting to say, if the whole world believes one way and I believe a different way, it must be that what? They're right, and I'm right. Well, see, you know how this is like an interesting thing in life, because on one hand, we have like Avram, right? Rashi HaKadosh says that Avram was called Avram HaIvri. So we translate Ivri as Hebrew. Truth is, it's not really what Ivri means. What does Ivri mean? The etymology?
The other side.
Meaning what Rashi HaKadosh says, humanity was on one side, and Avram was on the other side. So the truth is, many times in life, if you're the only person saying something, and everyone else is saying something different, it's quite probable that you're wrong, right? I want to be clear. There are some people who go through life and like they're always right. It doesn't make it. So remember, everything depends on who the other voices are. So sometimes if the other voices themselves are solid, you know, upright, Ehrlich individuals, and that world is telling me one thing, and I'm saying something, it's quite possible I'm wrong. But there are times in life where the Rove says X, and I say Y, and I'm right, and they're wrong. But it takes a degree of personal courage to be able to say that just because society says certain things are okay, and just because society encourages certain things, and just because society has suddenly rewritten the laws of holiness and morality, just because they say it's good, doesn't mean that I should bow to that. It doesn't mean that I should give into that. It doesn't mean that I should go ahead and buy into that. So says the PhD, Rebbe will say, and when you do, Rebbe will say, because what happens? It's incredible. Rebbe will say, what happens when you buy into the values of society? When they run contrary to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's values, what happens? You lose yourself in the commotion. Rebbe will say, by the way, you see it. You see it, right? We see it, again, we see this contemporarily. Once you begin to buy into certain things, it's incredible. It's like you begin to lose your whole moral compass. You begin to lose like your whole spiritual direction in life. Suddenly, again, I'm just swallowed up by what society has determined, and I lose my sense of self. And I'm so caught up ultimately, again, in the pathways of the world, achinevat mimenu kalachush ladas matovu mara. The most thing can happen that if a person gets so caught up in all the societal sensitivities and gets so and buys into society's definitions, moral, immoral, right, wrong, over time, you know what happens? Over time, I totally lose my moral compass. Over time, messed up. Just I don't even know what's up, what's down, what's right, what's wrong. What should I do? What should I abstain from? And I will say my entire sense of good and bad is defined by what? If the world, if society says it's good, then it's good. And if society says it's bad, then it's bad. So is this incredible? Isn't this great? I will say, and is this not one of the greatest challenges we face today? Because I will say, the reality is that greater society is absolutely at odds with our sense of. When I say ours, by the way, I will say it's not just Judaism, right? It's greater society often feels like it's at odds with just any type of Judeo-Christian value system. Right, it's all up for grabs. It's all up for grabs. And I will say, what happens is, if you begin to buy into that, then it just warps a person's entire sense of right and wrong. And I will say, when that right and wrong ultimately, again, so obviously, if my entire sense of right and wrong becomes warped, I can't be pashut. I will say, because pashut, to be a pashut, to be a simple Jew, by definition means, just to give a straight answer, just to focus on what's right and what's wrong. Yes.
What's the fine line between being respectful to those folks and...
Who are you calling those folks? Yeah, right.
And then holding your ground with what you believe in.
Right. So the truth is, Mamish just spoke about this morning in Daf Yomi. Oh yeah.
Must have been.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So this is a much bigger conversation, but David, I think it's exactly as you said it. You always have to be respectful of other people, right? There is never an excuse to be disrespectful to someone. Sure. So someone, whatever choices they're making in life, I respect your choice to make your choices. The challenge becomes when that value system is going to be foisted upon greater society. That's when a person has to say, listen, I respect your right to do whatever you're going to do. Respect mine, right? Mutual respect. So I'm not telling you how you should be, and you can't tell me how I should be. And that's where often the breakdown is, right? That's where often the breakdown is. Mutual respect, absolutely. I will say, and that's why, again, in all seriousness, you know, especially as Torah Jews, we must be ever vigilant how we speak about people, how we speak about different ethnicities, how we speak about different races, how we speak about different religions, different orientations. A Jew is never allowed to be disparaging. Is never allowed to be disparaging. Because, first of all, because we've been on the receiving end of generations of disparagement, and it's hurtful and it's horrible. And simply, it's not the way that Selam Elohim talks. It's not the way. And I will say, and furthermore, when you do that, you become part of the problem. So every single human being is created with Tzelem and Elokim, and every single human being has to be created with respect. That being said, I respect your ability to be you. You respect my ability to be me. I won't foist my stuff upon you. You don't foist your stuff upon me. And Shalom Yisrael. Shalom Yisrael. Again, not our topic. I think it's a much... Yeah.
Isn't there a Torah principle, though, that those who are merciful to those who are wicked will eventually be wicked to those who are...
Yeah.
So those who are acting in a way that's against the Torah, isn't it almost I would think it'd be the opposite, where it'd almost be praiseworthy to
mistreat. Right. So, to call it out. Right. To call it
out.
So, Chad, here's what I would tell you is, that's a Gemara. And I will tell you like this.
Yeah.
Gemaras like that are talking to a person who really has his entire spiritual identity in order. So if you're the kind of person, your house is in order, call out whoever and whatever you want. Your house is not in order. My house is not in order. No one here has a house that's fully in order. So because of that, we don't call out anyone else. I don't mean to say your house now. I'm just saying we're all in the same state. In other words, it's not like my life is in a place where, okay, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing and everything is where it should be, that I should start calling out the misdeeds and misdirections of others. So I think that's how you reconcile it. Again, I want to be clear, you don't praise things that are immoral and inappropriate, but there's a concept of accepting people for who and what they are, even though I vehemently disagree. If you ask me, do I agree with what it is that you're doing, whatever the is, I say, no, I don't agree. I think you're wrong. I actually think it's absolutely terrible. But I respect your right to choose for you. I mean, don't say the last part about it, absolutely terrible. But right. But Lamaisa, there is a way. See, you know what the great challenge is? To be honest, then we have to get back to this. The great challenge is, in our society, we've lost the ability to disagree agreeably. In other words, every machlokes is a fight. Right, and that's everything is so just acidic and so corrosive. So it used to be when I was a child in the shtetl, right? It used to be you could disagree with someone, and we could still, just like it used to be that families don't have to not stop talking to each other because of who they vote for presidents, right? In other words, it used to be people could be affiliated with different candidates and different parties and different this, and you weren't labeled a Rasha because of who you voted for, because of this and that. It's a breakdown. And the truth is, it's not a topic for tonight, which I've said for the 15th time now, right? She was like, but I think it's all tied together. This whole thing is tied together. In other words, the fundamental undoing of the fabric of society is simply because of a general sense of insecurity. When there's insecurity, you feel the need to foist your opinions upon other people. And if they don't accept it, you perceive it as an attack instead of their right to believe as they believe. And then you create this vicious cycle where any level of disagreement is considered to be a personal attack. And once that happens, there's no room for any type of normative dialogue within society. All right, we'll solve that problem right when we finish the show. Yes.
So today I was looking at a modern, quote-unquote, modern Orthodox left, kind of left side.
Oh, gosh.
website, and Dafka, they had an outreach program to LGBTQRZY and all that, and paragraphs of it.
The position paper that was written.
No, it was a
Chavavay.
It was part of their thing, and I was like, on the surface, it sounds nice. I mean, they're trying to, these people feel lonely, they're not accepted in the Orthodox community, and they're trying to, reach out to them and make them feel make them feel wanted and that kind of thing. So I was just curious what your opinion would be.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, are there more poppers? Are there more poppers? The truth is, that is a much, much bigger topic. A much bigger topic about. And I will tell you that what I will just say is the topic of, you know, how to create that interface between the LGBTQ community and the frum community is a major issue that I don't think has been fully and properly addressed. I think that you'll find certain people who are going ahead and addressing it in certain ways. I find those approaches fundamentally flawed because I think that the result of those approaches is you are de facto accepting alternative lifestyles as a viable thing within our community. And that's dangerous. The question is, how do you create a system where every single Jew, independent of their orientation, feels welcome, feels loved, feels accepted, without going ahead and wholesale condoning movements which are fundamentally antithetical, and there is no way to reconcile them with Torah Judaism? That's the million-dollar question. So I think what you saw are I think the attempts come from a good place, but I think they are profoundly and wholly misguided and frankly dangerous, which is why, unfortunately, again, I think, you know, you will find it feels sometimes like orthodoxy is headed towards a major rupture in the not-so-distant future of the, I'll call it, left of center going one way, center and right of center going a different way. And this is probably one of those hot button issues. But again, you know, so it's a great question. It deserves its own. I've actually thought about doing this on Shavuos night because it's a topic. You know, LGBTQ is just one issue. It's the issue of the day. But there's a lot of different pieces that go into this. But again, I will say, I want to be clear. Does every single frum community have an obligation to make every single Jew feel welcome and loved and accepted? Yes. There's not a shayla about that. And I will say the same way, so if somebody's a mechalal Shabbos, or somebody eats tarfus, or somebody wears shatnez, or somebody watches pornography, or somebody do it, we all do averus. We all do averus. Just try to which avera you're doing. And we don't say, well, you know what? You really did a lot of averus this week. I'm sorry, you know what? Why don't you sit this Shabbos out? Right? Why don't you just go ahead and sit this Shabbos out? So again, our community, right? What do we say at Kol Nidre? What do we say at Kol Nidre? Anu matirin lehispalel im ha'avaryanim. On Yom Kippur, what we say is, we're going to daven even with the sinners. And I will say, you know, when people say that, they're like, oh yeah, I know exactly who that's talking about. That's you. Right? And meanwhile, the mice again, who is it talking about? It's talking about me. I'm saying I'm allowed to be here, even though I am a sinner. So every single Jew lives with inconsistencies, and every single Jew does things that are not like the Ratzon Hashem, and yet we all have a seat at the table. And the truth is, again, even people with different orientations, we have to figure out a way to allow people to be part of a community. But the shaila is how to do that in a way that does not compromise halacha and does not water down the standards of the Ribono Shel Olam's Torah. That's the million-dollar question. Let's get back to this again.
Sorry.
Yeah. Good.
Sins in private.
Yeah. Also, look. Also, say, and with this, we're mamish moving on. What I also say is, it's always easy to stand in judgment of people when it's not your challenge, right? Always easy, right? Oh, there's the public sinners, this, that. Chevra, there are people in this world and people in the Jewish community who want to be good from Erlich Jews, but were born with a different type of attraction. It's not the pshat that someone decided, hey, let me go try something else, right? And in other words, there are people who legitimately, remember, anything the Torah assers, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that there is a proclivity for it. If man doesn't have a proclivity for it, the Torah doesn't asser it. So if the Torah has to asser, lo sishkav ish mishkav isha, that means that it exists. that it exists. So you just have to be very careful. In other words, it's always easy. In other words, just imagine if someone took your Avera, and because we all have our Avera, right, and became just, well, come on, you're, what are you doing? You know better. Anyone could say that about any of us. We just always have to be careful about standing in judgment, especially of other Jews, even if we disagree fundamentally and profoundly with their lifestyle. But again, thanks a lot for bringing this up. This was really, this was fantastic. Let's go. We're doing it. We have, this is why we do not finish this safe, right? Just for the, no, it's not trying to get rid of that. It's me. All right, Kevin, let's go.
You know, I didn't come last week. I know. I made it 14 pages while I was gone.
All right, Kevin, let's go. So remember, it says the Piagetzna. Okay. Says the Piagetzna. So remember again, why can't I be a Tamim? Right? Why do I have difficulty being a Tamim? Because often what I've done is I've abdicated my sense of right and wrong, ultimately again, to greater society. And suddenly again, my own hashkafas are gone. And instead again, whatever society says is good, and whatever society says is bad, is bad. He goes on, Adraba. So Rabbah said, this is incredible. So because of that, I can't be a Pasha to Yid if I've lost my moral compass. So what do you do with that? What do you do with that? So Rabbah, look at the Piagetzna. Adraba, Tetzaya b'daitcha, ilu hayisa ata yichidi ba'olam. Imagine the following. Imagine if you were the only person in this world. Just imagine for a moment, you're the only person who lives in this world. V'chol ma'asecha, lo v'shum ish v'lo v'shum p'niyatiyena. And I would say, you know, here's the incredible part. You know what the good part about being the only person in the world is? What's the great part about being the only person in the world? Right. There's no peer pressure. There's no peer pressure, right? In other words, whatever you're going to do, why are you going to do it? Because it's right. I'm going to do what I'm going to do because it's right. I'm going to abstain from certain things because they're wrong. And it has nothing to do with anyone else because, again, there is no one else. There's no society. There's no peer pressure. There's no trying to impress. So we'll say, this is incredible. It says the Piagetzna. Do you want to know how to become a Pashat person? How to become a Pashat person? Is imagine for a moment you're the only person in the world. Live your life. I know it's set. Just be careful with the words. He says, live your life as if you're the only person in the world. And I was saying, now, you have to be careful with that because that could come across as like arrogance. He doesn't mean it like live your life, like don't care about anyone else. What he says is like, when you're trying to formulate your sense of right and wrong and decide what you do and what you shouldn't do, pretend for a moment, what decision would you make if there was no one else in the world? Now, let's say it's hard to think that way because the truth is our decisions always have an impact greater and beyond us, right? That's always the case. But Lamaisa, what he's saying is, it's such a fascinating way to think. Imagine for a moment you're going to do something. Imagine there was no one else. Would you do it or wouldn't you do it? Instead, stop going ahead, literally again, and giving up your will. Stop being mevatel yourself in front of the entire world. He says, V'chol ma'asecha, him rak lefra chovcha shalecha lasos. So often, I will say, it's incredible. It says, look at these words. And again, in the early 1900s, says the Piagetzna, so often, you know how we behave? We behave the way we think society expects us to behave. I will say, isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? That so often, what governs my decision-making and what I should and shouldn't do is not what's right, not what's wrong, but rather, again, what does society dictate that I do? How does society dictate that I should behave? Fafilu, the Kedua says, Fafilu, this is incredible. Fafilu, kisha'ata meite lezulascha, gamkein ha'kol kedei lefra'ach ovecha. Sometimes, even when we do something good for the other, I both say, why am I doing something good for the other? Why am I doing it? Why? I'm paying a debt. I'm paying quid pro quo. Right? It's not because there's any deeper sense of good. Right? It's not because there's any deeper sense of connection. It's not because there's any deeper sense of chevroshaft. But rather, again, there's just, I have a debt. Right? Society expects me to do X. The community expects me to do Y. And that's why I do it. I have an obligation to go out and do something nice for someone else. And I will say, now, it is interesting because I do have an obligation to do something nice for someone else, right? In other words, halacha very often mandates and directs how I behave. But he says, lo l'shem kavana v'tachlis chutz mimecha min dechifa pnimis yeshedochas. Rabbo says, listen to this. The Piaget says, Rabbo says, you know what we're striving to get to? When I do something good, do you know why I want? I want to get to the level that when I do something good, why am I doing it? Why? Because I want to. Because at the end of the day, there's something inside of me that is pushing me to do it because deep down my neshama knows this is good. This I know it's good. I'm not doing it because of a societal expectation. I'm not doing it because of a peer pressure. I'm not doing it because of the quid pro quo. I'm pashut, Rabbi say. Pashut. Pashut, pashut, pashut. And Pashto says, why do you do good things? Why do you do good things? Because they're good things. It's the right thing to do. Right thing to do. Somebody sees it, somebody doesn't see it. Somebody likes it, somebody doesn't like it. It's the right thing. My inner core tells me that this is something good to do, and therefore I'm going to do it. Va'omeres. Kachata mitzuva. Ve'kachata tzarech lasos. My inner core tells me, listen, this is what you're obligated to do. This is what you have to do. Isn't this incredible? Isn't this incredible? So the Piaget says, we'll say, you know what it takes to be a Pasha the Yid? You have to drown out the voices. You, to a certain degree, have to drown out societal voices and figure out how to do things because you feel from your core that they are the right thing to do. Don't do it because someone's going to give you a shkayach. Don't do it because someone's going to owe you something. Don't do it because all society says that this is the right thing to do. Do it because from your inner core you understand that this is the right thing to do. Now, I'll say two things. I will point out sometimes what society tells you to do could be right also. In other words, these things are not always at odds. But even when they're not at odds, the shaila is the motivation. Right? The motivation. Am I doing the good things in life because, hey, it's societally acceptable and expected to do this? Or because my inner core is propelling me to go ahead and behave a certain way? It's incredible. He goes on, he says, and I will say, if I habituate myself to behave in this way on an ongoing basis, so we'll say it's incredible. So step number one, says the Piagetsna, to creating expansiveness of thought and a different level of vision is to be Pashat. How do you become Pashat, Rabbi Osai? Essentially, drown out the voices. And I will say, drown out the voices and figure out, am I doing the things in life that I'm doing because of peer pressure, societal pressure, a desire to fit in, quid pro quo, or does the good that I do in my life stem from my core? And I will say the goal is, of course, to allow the good that you do to mamish stem from the core of your existence. Drown out voice. I will say, now you understand also why in Chassidus, right, his bodidus is so incredibly important, right? His bodidus, being alone with oneself, it takes on a new meaning, right? Because I will say we're social beings. So right, in any point in the day, what happens? I'm surrounded by influences. And all the more so, again, in our digital age, I'm constantly surrounded by influences. And I will say, the truth is, the Piagetsna would tell us that sometimes it's hard to know, right? In other words, it's hard to know, why do I do the things that I do? Why do I do the things that I do? Do they come from my inner core? Or ultimately, again, is it because that, like, society has conditioned me to think that this is what I do? So that's why his bodidus, being alone with oneself, being detached from all of those other influences, allows one to become grounded in their inner core. So I will say that's step one. If you take a look, let's go by it a little bit. If we skip a little bit, he says as follows. Go to Os Tes Zayin. We have a few minutes left. We'll hop in a little bit more. Unless you have anything else you want to bring up.
You really didn't answer me.
It sounds very simple, but it takes an immense amount of bravery and self-confidence.
100%.
It's very hard.
Right. So we'll say, I want to point out, the godless and the overwhelming nature of the Sefer is there's nothing here at the Piaget that said that is like intellectually complicated. That's the whole chap. It's not intellectually complicated, but correct. What it's telling me essentially is you have to peel away all of the parts of you, strip it down to your core, and figure out, like, what propels you in life? Why do you do the things that you do? Why do you behave the way that you behave? Is it society driving me? Is it my inner core driving me? And I would venture to say, the Piagetist would say, for most of us, society does drive us to do a lot of things. But then the shaila becomes, how do I get back into my core? And ultimately, again, allow my inner core to drive the good and not allow the good to be informed or shaped by anything else. So, well, by the way, we're going to talk about how to get to that core as well. We're not finished.
Okay, so basically, when a person goes home, you tell his wife, I'm not doing something because you told me to do it. I'm doing because I want to do it.
Okay? You know, I did not say that. I did not say that. I would suggest just do it. Just do it. You can think about it afterwards. You can think about why I did it afterwards. Just do it. That's the kind of...
Is that really a Torah Hashkafa that you should think about? You're the only person in the world? That seems hard to understand.
Chemia, first of all, you can't ask it like that. The Piagetist said it, so of course it's a Torah Hashkafa. Let me rephrase your question.
Okay.
How do I reconcile this statement of the Piagetist with everything I've ever learned in my life up until this point? That's what you meant. Right.
That's exactly
Go
what
ahead. Meant. Yeah. So, yeah. He's not. So, tell me what's bothering you.
The only way that you know to be able to grow as a person is. We don't believe that you should live by yourself. We don't believe we're not like monks or something with a lot of asceticism and to sit there and to be there. That's not a way. If a person lived by themselves and had no other standard to go on, I don't know what they would do. He said, "Well, who cares what
I
do?"
He's difference. Not suggesting you live by yourself. That's not what he's suggesting is that what shapes your behavior? What shapes your behavior? In other words, is it society that impacts my behavior, or is it my inner core? So how can you tell? How do you know that? So the simple answer, so what he's telling you to envision is, envision yourself as if you were alone in the world. So if I'm alone in the world, there is no societal pressure, right? There's nothing else but me and my core. So if there was nothing else in the world, what would I be doing and how would I be doing it? And that's very instructive in seeing where I'm holding, because that'll very quickly tell me what's coming from inside of me versus what's coming from an external influence. Does that make a little bit more sense?
Yes.
Yeah, he's not telling you, again, remember, first of all, it's not just that you can't be your only person in the world, because remember, we have a whole body of Torah called Ben Adol Mechavero, which by definition requires us. He's being hyper-focused over here, which is, our goal is to become Pashat. He's identified, he's just identified, why do I have such difficulty being Pashat? And it's because, at the end of the day, I'm complicated. Why am I complicated? Because I've outsourced my entire value system to society. And whatever society says is right or wrong, and so what I've done is, I've totally lost my sense of self. Well, if I've lost my sense of self, I'm ridiculously complicated, and therefore I can't be Pashat. All the Piagetist is saying is, reclaim your sense of self. And how do you do that? Close your eyes and imagine you're the only person in the world. So suddenly again, society is not shaping me. I want the good things I do in life to come from my inner core. And I think what this does is as follows. I think if we adopt this position of the Piagetist, I will say what it means is like this. Before you do something in life, what you do is you pause. You pause, right? And what do you do during that pause? You ask yourself a simple question. What's the question? What's the question? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Right? And I will say, by the way, I think it's interesting, and you could ask this by in everything, I will say, a person comes to shul in the morning, they put on tefillin. Ask yourself, why am I doing this? Right? I will say, by the way, for a lot of us, the answer is social pressure.
Great.
Social pressure. Right? So that's interesting, because I don't put on tefillin because I want to serve the Ribono Shel Olam. I put on tefillin because, like, that's the expectation that the community has of a Jewish man. Now, again, I will say, does that mean if you have the wrong... Now, again, so all the Piagetist would say is, isn't that interesting to discover that about yourself? And kind of, like, if you apply this to every single thing in life, it's fascinatingly instructive to see why I do the things that I do. See, I will say, the reason why we're so often... Why this is difficult for some of us to like, wrap our head around... is because, remember, Yiddishkeit is an actional religion, right? And we are often focused on action, shelo lishma, balishma, don't worry about motivations, just go ahead and do. And that is absolutely true on a certain level. the Piagetsna is trying to take us down a different path of developing our thought and being able to see the unseen dimensions of existence. So in order to do that, you have to operate a different way. So all the Piagetsna is telling me is, go through your daily life, and at certain points, I can't probably can't do it every single moment, but at certain points, stop and ask yourself, why am I doing this? why am I doing this? And it'll be interesting to see, what are the things that come from my core, and what are the things that come from society? And Piagetsna, I think, would say, I think to quote him, he would say, I'm not a betting man, but if I had to put money on it, I would guess that most of the things we do occur because of external pressure, whether it's our own community, our own family, greater society, and don't necessarily emanate from the core. Well, once I know that, that's very interesting, because now I know why I can't be Pashit. Now I know I'm difficulty being a Pashit, a Tamim Dik Yid, because at the end of the day, I don't really have an intact sense of self, because it's not me that drives a lot of things that I do in life. It's the external stimuli that drives a lot of this. And if it's the external stimuli that drive that's in the driver's seat, I'm not really the one moving my life forward. And if I'm not the one moving my life forward, then by definition, I can never reach this level of tamima. So we'll stop over here for tonight. We covered exactly the amount of ground I wanted to cover. This is perfect. I wanted to do four lines. We did four lines.
So we shouldn't do it
to the
polish,
right? It's a way of intentionally thinking, so you get to the polish.
Right. Correct. Correct. No, I'm saying the shoulder shot polish mob does. I will say, by the way, next week. There's no shir because there is the Daf Yomi Siyum with Eli Beer, but the Chevra is invited. I put it out on the chat. So even if you're doing Daf Yomi, not doing Daf Yomi, come. It's going to be a beautiful Halig evening with Eli Beer. It's going to be fantastic next Thursday night. So it's not a stira. You're 100% right. But I think we often look at it as it comes up. What does Shlosha Balashar really mean? It essentially means like, don't worry about the thoughts so much. Focus on the actions.
As long as you're being intentional, honest, and there is a Balashar, you know, along the way somewhere.
Also, understanding the problem. You say it's a crazy.